From the Len de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 26th day of September 2024. It's the final day of our Fall Fund Drive. Please pick up the phone right now and dial in your support for Illinois Public Media's agricultural programming. If this program makes a difference to you, if you listen a couple of times a week or every day or once a month, and it helps you make decisions on the farm, please dial in that support at 217-244-9455 or go to willgive.org. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets, of course. We'll do that with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. And then we'll hear again from University of Illinois Extension wheat scientist Aaron Hager. Today, we'll take up dicamba, not only in soybean, but also in corn. It's some information you as a producer will definitely want to listen to on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Before we get started with the show today, just a reminder for you to dial that number, 217-244-9455, and a thank you to Terry Preeb from Indiana for making that call yesterday. And he did something really special. There is a way that you can honor individuals when you make a donation to Illinois, the University of Illinois, even to University of Illinois Foundation, WILL, through our normal willgive.org function. When you do that, you can make a donation in honor and or memory of someone. In this case, Terry wanted to make a donation in honor of two of our analysts, Emeritus Analyst Wayne Nelson from Tuesday afternoon and Kurt Kimmel from Monday afternoon. Thank you, Terry, for making that donation. If you feel the need and want, you can do so too. Why don't you join Terry at 217-244-9455 or go to willgive.org and make your donation in honor of one of our analysts or of one of your favorite people.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn for the day settled at 413 and a quarter, down 2 cents. The March at 431, 2 1/4 lower. And May at 441, down 2 1/2. November beans, 1041, 12 1/4 lower. January at 1059 and a quarter, down 12 1/2. And the March, down 11 3/4 at 1073. Soft red winter wheat, down a nickel at 584 1/4 in the December. And the hard red December contract finished down 2 cents. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net is now here. He's in the field this afternoon. Hi, Matt. How are things going there?
Oh, pretty good. We're actually picking corn here today. We had a fair amount of rain here over the last weekend, and we'd like to get back into beans, but I just don't think they quite test today. Of course, we've got rainfall supposedly coming in tonight. Got to hope that doesn't turn out to be too much, but our thoughts were, you know, if we get an extra couple hours of running today, we may as well just do that and go with corn. So that's what we've decided to do.
You may have decided to do that, but it sure looks like there is pressure in the bean market. Was that profit taking that took place today? The beans were up overnight and then managed to lose ground.
You know, I think a couple things are going on. I mean, for one thing, over the noon hour, the weather maps turned a little bit wetter for Brazil, which is something that, our good friend Eric Snodgrass has been telling our group anyway, that, you know, he felt like we'd get a normalized rainfall pattern develop here once we got into late September, early October. So, I think that's got a lot to do with it, first of all, Todd. Second of all, I mean, there's no doubt that this particular rally hasn't necessarily made sense, so to speak, from a fundamental standpoint. It's had a lot more to do with the funds and their money flow situation and, you know, making their portfolios look good at the end of the month, at the end of the quarter. And quite frankly, I think you probably kind of ran out of some of that here today.
So the interest rate change from the Federal Reserve in the United States, the push in the economy by the Chinese, not enough to keep the market running higher?
No, I don't believe so. I mean, you've already taken the bean market up, you know, essentially well over a dollar, you know, and so you're looking this morning, for instance, at, well over 10.50, depending on, where you're at. I mean, most producers in the Corn Belt are looking at, fall delivery out of the field you know, in this level where you're over $10. Yeah, and so a lot of these folks are able to get to, for instance, $10, you know, as far as a fall delivery bid. And, you know, that's just a pretty darn nice thing to see whenever people were concerned, you know, maybe 3 weeks ago about sub $9 cash beans. So there's no doubt that the market's been very impressive, but at the same time, you can't expect it to go up every day.
Are you telling those who have not made sales that they ought to?
Yes. Selling opportunity, in my opinion. I think especially in the part of the world that we're in, where we're blessed with awfully good bean yields for the most part. I mean, most of the growers that we're talking to and producers that we work with, our clients are telling us, you know, maybe they're not quite as good as what they thought they were going to be, but they're still fantastic beans, you know, relatively speaking, above APH type yields. And so whenever you get those type of yields with anything over $10, that's a pretty darn good place to be, especially once again, you know, whenever you took that November bean price down to, oh, I don't know, 9.55 or so, where we had the market there, you know, earlier in the month of August.
What are your expectations for soybean exports for the year, particularly to China? And I suppose by the year, I mean by the end of the calendar year, which is when China would normally be importing soybeans from the United States.
Yeah, and so, you know, there's no doubt, Todd, that China has been in the news this week. You know, you come in here and you say, hey, we're going to lower interest rates, we're going to boost our economy, and oh, by the way, the same morning we get that information, you know, we bought 7 cargoes of beans. And so no doubt that the Chinese have kind of been on the move, so to speak. What are the expectations out to the end of the year? You know, right now we're fairly competitive, but I mean, we have to basically see the systems like we've got coming in right now. If it does take that left turn, you know, bless these river systems a little bit with some moisture in some of the watershed areas, because there's no doubt that, you know, it's concerning whenever you get river levels like they are, you know, that you're going to make it a heck of a lot tougher to be able to be competitive with this export market, not being able to float full barges down the river. So I think as long as we can keep to where we're not having issues like that, I like our prospects of still getting a little bit more Chinese business. I'm not sure we meet the USDA goal, because I do think that their goal is awful lofty as far as where our exports are going to fall. But at the same token, they've been awfully good here lately.
The important part would be for it to be on pace, I suppose, through this part of the growing season of the export season into the month of January.
Right. Yeah. And our pace analysis, you know, causes a little concern for us as far as, you know, do we think that we're going to be able to reach that lofty goal? Yeah, I'd say that's kind of a stretch right now. But at the same time, you know, we didn't think that corn would ever make it either this last year, and it did. So, you know, you don't want to ever rule it out. There's always a chance that we're going to see these exports that we've seen here lately hold on a little bit longer. But as you suggested earlier, we really need to make hay while the sun's up, because you get out past the first year, you know, and it starts to you start to see a little bit more drying up of business type feel.
On the corn side of the ledger, what is your assessment of the marketplace at this time?
You know, on corn, it's just kind of been a little more of a lackluster market, you know, than soybeans, even relatively speaking. We just really haven't gotten as excited. You know, you look at this corn market, though, and clearly, you know, you went down to a 385 type low in August, and, you know, you bounced 30 cents off of that. That's not a bad bounce whatsoever. You know, I'm not saying that we're done going up by any means. I think that there could be a post-harvest bounce as well, and you know, maybe through the month of October, which is something we've seen a lot of times whenever we get too far away from that spring price. But I think overall, this is a big corn crop. Now, will it be 183.6? I don't know. I just think it's going to be an awfully big crop. As the growers that we talk to, it seems like it's a very common theme that, you know, their beans are okay, maybe a little disappointing, but still pretty decent. Whereas on corn, I just haven't heard a whole lot of people bad-mouthing their corn crop. So I do think this is an awfully big corn crop, and I think that'll keep some pressure, especially given the stocks that we carried into this year.
Well, speaking of that, USDA will give us those final numbers on Monday. What are your expectations?
You know, I'd be lying if I said I thought we could get some bullish info there. I mean, maybe bullish versus expectations. There's no doubt expectations are to be, you know, plentiful stocks. I mean, whether you're talking corn or beans, but especially corn. I mean, there's no doubt that we carried a ton of corn, you know, into this growing season. We still hear about old corn coming into elevator systems and kind of clogging things up a little bit. So, We know there was a plethora of old corn. It'll be very interesting to see kind of where the USDA pegs that. That's a tough one because we don't know. Are they going to include a little bit of early harvest? That's a conversation we always have. But at the same time, I think you'd be hard-pressed if you're really going to be expecting some sort of a bullish surprise, you know, out of stocks here, at least this year.
You're telling producers to market soybeans because they had rallied 90 cents to a dollar. On the corn, do you have a different plan of action?
Yeah, I mean, with corn, there's a couple, three different things that we're looking at. You know, first of all, if you're going to the elevator, I know that most people say just go ahead and sell it. Don't commercially store. Here's the thing about that. There's no doubt that basis is likely to improve significantly from where we're at now. You're going to have to pay the storage whether this market rallies or not. So you got to keep that in the back of your head. But I wouldn't completely rule out some commercial storage. But at the same time, if that's something you're doing, a person, you know, may want to sell a call or something to kind of help pay for it if they end up having to pay for storage and the market doesn't go up. Now, whenever you're talking about bushels in the bin at home, you know, there's a lot of different things you can do. But we certainly like the idea of kind of getting into a position where whenever this market finally gives us an opportunity, taking advantage of that carry in the market, you know, maybe hedging off some of that risk, whether you do it with options or futures, but essentially waiting on that basis to come to you once you've got a worst case scenario established as far as, you know, your price basis aboard.
You mentioned that farmers were hoping for a good corn crop and that their expectations were being met or even slightly better. Do you think this big crop will get bigger when USDA releases the October crop production figures?
That's a tough question, Todd, but if I had to try to guess, I'd say no, it doesn't get bigger. I think it's an awfully big crop. We got to remember, you know, we haven't sniffed anything within five bushel of what we're talking here this year, you know, already. And so that's a massive crop. And so my thought process on that is, you know, if we go down even a half a bushel, and I'm not saying we will, but even if we do, I don't think it's the end of the world. Now, they've certainly built a ton of demand into this thing, you know, and so you could make the balance sheet look a heck of a lot better than it's looked for a while. But at the same time, getting substantially below 2 billion is going to be very tough to do. I just think this is too big of a crop overall. But no, I don't think that we go up much from 183.6.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with agmarket.net. It's the final day of our fall fun drive, and I want to thank all of those who've made their contributions already. We appreciate it. If you have not, and you are willing, wanting, and needing, well, needing's a strong word, but I might like to think you need. Anyway, if you would like, please do make a contribution today. You can do that at willgive.org. That's willgive.org. Or you can dial this number, 217-244-9455. It's pretty simple and easy. Doesn't take very much time either. Either way, make sure that you put in the comments section or tell the person on the other end of the line you are pledging in support of agriculture. Now, the way you do that, again, is 217-244-9455 or online at willgive.org. You can make a pledge, just call and tell us, or if you prefer, you can use a MasterCard, Discover, American Express. You can even write a check and send it in to us, but we need to know today, or would like and want to know today, that you're going to do that. Again, 217-244-9455. I like the $120 level, but any donation is welcome. And we thank our listeners. We really do for taking the time to make that pledge of financial support. It's important to us. About 40% of our budget comes from you, the listeners. It's why we try to pay attention to what you want from us. And thank you for making the donation today. In today's agricultural news, we'll start in Washington, D.C., where longtime Iowa Senator and farmer Chuck Grassley is throwing cold water on the chances of Congress approving temporary farm relief in a lame duck session.
Low prices have not been considered a natural disaster.
And Senator Grassley says that's what it would take for a year-end lame duck spending bill to include farm relief, historically provided in disasters.
Prior to the late 1980s, it used to be quite a regular thing in the case of a drought or floods or some other natural disaster, or even a president putting an embargo on exports of our agricultural products that lowered the prices.
Grassley says farm relief now comes largely through crop insurance. Still, the American Farm Bureau Federation argues it and commodity groups and some lawmakers are already discussing a year-end rescue package if a new five-year farm bill is not in the cards. But Grassley isn't hopeful farmers will have more than what they have now.
They'll have what's in the 2018 farm bill, which is a reference prices that should be increased by 20%, but they won't be increased by 20%. In the case of just a one-year extension.
Grassley repeatedly predicted a new farm bill would have to wait until 2025. Farm Bureau and the other ag groups argue farmers cannot wait any longer and that many can no longer afford to keep farming. Let's stay with the farm bill, where navigating a softer ag economy and no new farm bill were the chief topics at the 10th Annual Ag Outlook Forum on September the 16th in Kansas City. It was hosted by AgriPulse and the Agricultural Business Council of Kansas City. The forum is a critical information exchange between national leaders in ag policy, economics, and business during the harvest season. In an overview of the economy, USDA chief economist Seth Meyer said most crop prices will likely continue their downward trend through the end of 2024, but so will total production expenses, alleviating some of the losses. He says crop receipts are expected to lower net farm income for 2024, and he's hopeful that farmers have several good years of farm income stashed away to help carry them through the leaner times. Jackson Tackick of Farmer Mac says the major difference between now and the last down cycle is the interest rate. Today we'll hear again from University of Illinois weed scientist Aaron Hager. This time around, we'll talk about dicamba herbicides and soybean. The courts, as you'll hear from Aaron, have moved to take those products off the marketplace.
The courts vacated the three soybean formulations of dicamba, Xtendimax, Ingenia, and Tavium from Syngenta. So as it stands right now, those products cannot be applied in 2025. All three of the registrants have repetitioned EPA to grant new labels. But it's a wait and see kind of a thing. I would be surprised, I guess, if the agency makes a move to re-register or relabel those products in time for use in 25. But I don't always read the EPA very accurately either.
As it stands, those dicamba herbicides cannot be used on soybean in 2025, even, says Hager, if the product is already on hand. There's no provision allowing for such use, and it would be considered now off-label. So that's dicamba for soybean, but we're not done talking about it yet. Dicamba on corn has issues, too. It's possible, says Hager, to tank mix glufosinate, an HPPD inhibitor, and atrazine to control weeds in corn as an alternative, but there are caveats.
Here's the rub on all this stuff. We're dealing now with so many instances of non-target site resistance. This HPPD, the group 15, the group 4, this is all metabolic resistance. And, you know, we're the first ones to admit that we've got a lot long way to go to understand this. We don't understand why we see these resistance patterns that we do. We assume, which is a nice way of saying we're guessing here, that tank mixes are still the better way to go. But we follow that up by saying we may learn something 2 years, 3, 4, 5 years from now that says, you know, tank mixing could be the worst thing in terms of trying to slow the evolution of metabolic resistance. We just don't know right now. So quite honestly, 4 or 5 years ago, I quit trying to make specific chemical recommendations and just say, you know, here's the message now, folks. The only thing, we're going to continue to spray virtually every acre of corn and soybean in the state. I don't think that's going to change in the near future. But we're at a point now where we have to accept the fact we're going to have to do something in addition to that to try to either limit or preclude any seed production at the end of the year. Because right now, the only thing that we know with any certainty is that if there's no seed at the end of the year, there's no change in the frequency of any of these resistance alleles. Any surviving female that produces seed, that's the next generation. That has undergone another generation of selection. And you know, I just got off the phone with the retailer, and they said, you know, the company rep were coming in. They kept saying, well, you know, you just need to add more and more into these mixes. And it's like, look, folks, if we think that we can find a solution to a problem caused by using herbicides simply by using them differently, it's not going to work.
The issues with herbicides clearly frustrate Aaron Hager. And here's the point as it's related to dicamba.
You know, I get when people say we got to have dicamba in soybean, and my response is that no, we don't have to have dicamba in soybean, but I'm going to need it more in corn in very near future than I'm ever going to need it in soybean. And unfortunately, you know, we've compromised the efficacy of dicamba now since 2017 by using it in patterns that we have in soybean. So there's no guarantee that it's going to remain effective now when we're really going to have to rely on it more and more moving forward in post-corn.
That part brings up a sticky topic. There are regulations, or were regulations, for using dicamba products in soybean as it's related to timing and weather. Those aren't at least in place yet for corn.
But I've actually brought that up to Farm Bureau, to IFCA, to Department of Ag. If it's so important to have that temperature restriction on soybean, why do we not put it on the corn products also? And my reasoning is this. If we don't have dicamba soybean next year, we will still have off-target dicamba movement coming from corn. We've had it every year for 50-plus years. That dicamba was exclusively labeled for use in corn. It's going to happen again. We've got some huge, huge, significant issues with off-target movement and tree damage in the state that not everybody's aware of. But I just looked yesterday at a summary of some of the pesticide-related bills that were introduced in the previous legislative session. It's going to get very contentious for us if any of those bills ever make it out of committee.
And the proposed legislation is problematic, but really it is herbicide resistance that is the issue. And Hager has been saying for some time, mechanical weeding may be the only solution.
Well, it's not, do I need to go back to it? You're going to be forced to go to it. You know, I relayed this story to that retailer I just talked with. I said, you know, I remember back in January of 08 when we first started talking about very specific recommendations to manage glyphosate-resistant water hemp and soybean. We had a five-step approach. You started at number one. You worked your way south. It wasn't pick and choose which one that you wanted. And I got up on the corn and soybean classics in January, and I got through step number one, and nobody wanted to listen to me.
I was there. He's not wrong.
Because in 2008, we actually were recommending to soybean farmers that not only do you need to use a pre-emergent herbicide, you need to put the thing on at the full labeled rate.
Producers were used to using a three-quarter rate and saw that recommendation as simply adding cost, and suggested at the time that there would be something new, remember this is 2008, in the pipeline that would fix these issues eventually. As it turns out, there wasn't. And there still isn't. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at willag.org, where you will find that link to make your donation. It's willgive.org or 217-244-9455 in support of the ag programming that comes to you from the University of Illinois. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.